Hello, this is Pastor
Blog
Fred.
Talk
and
Radio.
Hello. Pastor Fred, welcome to Perspectives on the Bible. Glad you're with us today. Usually I don't have this many technical hang-ups, but today we just have a couple. Okay, today's show is an interesting one. I hope you'll enjoy it. We're going to be looking at the Gospel of St. Matthew, the 25th chapter, the first 13 verses. Let me read it to you. The Gospel of St. Matthew, chapter 25, verses 1 through 13. The kingdom of heaven will be like 10 virgins who took their lamps and went to meet the bridegroom. 5 of them were foolish, and 5 were wise. But when the foolish took their lamps, they took no oil with them, but the wise took flasks of oil with their lamps. As the bridegroom was delayed, they all became drowsy and slept. But at midnight there was a cry, "Here is the bridegroom, come out to meet him." All those virgins rose and trimmed their lamps. And the foolish said to the wise, "Give us some of your oil, for our lamps are going out." But the wise answered, saying, "Since there will not be enough for us and for you, go rather to the dealers and buy for yourselves." And while they were going to buy, the bridegroom came, and those who were ready went in with him to the marriage feast, and the door was shut. Afterward, the other virgins came also, saying, "Lord, Lord, open to us." But he answered, "Truly I say to you, I do not know you. Watch therefore, for you know neither the day nor the hour." This is a wonderful parable. I love this parable, but I want to put it in the context of what we're talking about. We're talking about, of course, the time of Jesus. We're talking about what would have been prominent in his day, a wedding. Now, this is probably a wedding in a small town, a village. It may be that the bride and the groom both live in the same village, or it may be the bride is in a different village from the groom. In those days, unlike our own, the reception was held in the home of the groom. And what would happen is the groom, in the day of the wedding, would get together with his groomsmen, his sponsors, his friends, his fellows, and they would prepare for the wedding. And then they would go to the bride's house, either in the town or another town. And there at the wedding, they would all be together and celebrate the ceremony of the wedding. And then after the wedding was over, they would parade through the town. Now, that might be the bride's town, or it might be a road between the bride's village and the groom's village. But it was a lot of moving around, dancing, celebration. And they would go from house to house and street to street so that the people of the community could be involved in the joy of the wedding. And they could know that this man was married. They could know the public commitment that this man and this woman had to each other. They could also pledge their loyalty in supporting them in their marriage. They would also acknowledge them, perhaps, if it was possible, with some small gift. From each place to place, just like today we give gifts. So not everybody would have been invited to the wedding, but those who were not invited to the wedding were provided for by the groom and the bride, as they would have a procession from the actual ceremony of the wedding, the bride's house, through the street, down the alleys, to the little they celebrated their event. And hours. Everybody would have opportunity to rejoice with the bride. Big, and it took a long time. And as I said, it might even be that the groom was in the town. He paraded her town, paraded his town, or he finally home where they would have the actual reception. And so here we have the groom doing that. And in the meantime, back in his house, those who were the special guests, those who had been specifically and personally invited to the meeting, they would be preparing for arrival. They didn't know how long it would take him. Among those who were invited were the people, all the virgins, women, who were usually friends, maybe even relatives, right, who would be ready at the home of to have a festival dance, enjoy, greet him. They were the official reception party, bridesmaids. And so in order for them to greet the groom, they knew he would be coming at night usually, they would have their lamps. And these were olive oil lamps, which is clay jars, and they would have a jar with them, extra olive oil. As the story is told, five thought enough of the situation to bring extra oil, and five did not. Call them the wise and the unwise, but let's just look at this situation. These virgins, these people, get honest, it can be guys too, you know, it just happens to be in this case a cultural context for the reception party, for the greeters, for those who were chosen to have the honor, and it was an honor, to greet the bridegroom. This specifically privileged position in the wedding party, they were members of the wedding party, was given to these 10 chosen people. They were chosen specifically and invited specifically. They knew well in advance, like any bridal party knew, when the day of the wedding was, what the wedding was about, when, where it was going to happen, and they knew what was expected of them. So we have five of them who think enough about this that they will not just take it in a cavalier fashion, but they will be prepared for whatever needs to be done in order to bring joy and happiness to the bride and the groom. Also, in order to fulfill the obligation which they have accepted, or in order to honor the privilege that they have been granted. And five bring extra oil, and five do not. Now, you know, we could look at this in our own context. How many times have we perhaps gotten privilege that we didn't realize was important until it was too late? How often may we have been invited to something we thought, oh, well, it's not that important to be invited to this, but it turns out that it was very important. Someone inviting you, someone asking you to come and be with them, that's a special thing. I remember, you know, times in my life when I didn't regard invitation, appointment, or a commitment that I had. And I would just sort of kind of, to be honest, I would just start it, treat it in a cavalier, offhanded fashion. Over time, though, I realized, especially when it happened to me, that, you know, when you are invited, it's a big deal. When someone asks you to come to their home, it's a big deal. When someone asks you to be in a wedding party, it's a big deal. And when someone says to you that they'd like you to honor them with your presence, they're giving you a privilege. They're honoring you by asking you. So take it in a cavalier fashion, easygoing fashion, and disregard it until the last minute. Now, there are people who do that. I've met people, know people who just don't understand the gravity, the significance of a personal invitation. Now, these people have been invited by the bridegroom, and the bridegroom, of course, in this story, is Jesus himself, or if we want to be in a bigger context, it's God himself. And so we are invited to a celebration of God, and he invites us. He asks us. He wants us to be in the bridal party, and he expects us to do we are doing it. Let's go back to the story. So now these bridesmaids, they realize that it's going to take a little longer than usual, but maybe, you know, to give the so-called unwise a break, maybe they came with filled up to the brim lamps, but they were unready, they were not ready for the delay of the bridegroom. Now, people might say, what kind of a bridegroom is he? He told them to be ready for him, and he takes his sweet time. He's late. Well, in this context, the bridegroom is not late. He is in context, supposed to take as long as it takes to get there, and they're supposed to be ready to receive him as long as it takes for him to get there. There's a relationship between the two things. He doesn't have a commitment to rush because he has an appointment to meet with them at 5 o'clock. He will get there when he gets there. He's providing the party. It's his event. It's his wedding. It's her wedding, the bridal couple. It's not for those who have been privileged to be invited to make the demand that the bridegroom should be here at 5 o'clock or else, you know, that type of thing. So to give them a break, they may have had full lamps, but the bridegroom takes longer than usual. And that can happen. He's the bridegroom. He may have decided to, maybe he was received so well in each town. Maybe there were so many people that he had to deal with. Maybe there were so many people who wanted him to stop a moment as they congratulated him and his new bride, that he was delayed. There was nothing he could do about it. He had an obligation. He wasn't just parading through the streets and saying, oh, look at me, I'm having a wedding, and you guys all clap, and you guys all throw flower petals in my path, and you guys all rejoice with me. The point is that he, when he goes through the streets, and when he receives your adulation, he also has a commitment to each one of them as he passes through the streets that he would honor them. If they're going to honor him in the parade, in the procession, then he's him well by taking as much time as it takes to get there. All along, understanding, the bridegroom all along understands that, of course, those who are at the house have a special privilege. They're going to have a special dinner. They're going to have special reception. They are invited guests. They're going to maybe spend the week. You know, they may stay overnight. Who knows what the situation. They may be frolicking for days. They're going to be in his home. They're going to drink his wine. They're going to eat his food. They're going to dance to his band. They're going to have his cake, as it were. So he has already paid his obligation to them by the invitation and by providing for them the feast. So the people at the house and the people who are the wise and foolish virgins, they already have their payment in waiting. Whereas the people in the villages and the towns who don't have the privilege of being invited, they are honored by the groom and the bride as they go through the streets of the towns and villages, and the groom and the bride owe them the commitment, not only of going through it, but of honoring them with their time, and not just to pass by, wave and high five them, but to stop and talk with them and to receive their praise and congratulations. Okay, so in that context, then the groom comes late, but he comes, he gets there, and the five unwise virgins say to the five wise virgins, our lamps are going out. It's taken so long for the groom and the bride to come that our lamps are going out. Give us some of yours so that we can have. And the wise say, well, no. If we give it to you, then there won't be enough for us. There's a couple of things here. They hear that the bridegroom is on his way. He's getting close, but he has not yet arrived. So they don't know exactly how much time it will take him even yet to get there. And secondly, they're going to have their lamps lit throughout the wedding party. They're not just going to blow them out when he arrives. So they have to have enough oil for the reception as well. And they're not about to give it to these unwise girls, because if they do, then neither one of them will be prepared. Neither one will have enough. So if I share with you, you won't have enough to do what you will have to do. I won't have enough do what I have to. And, you know, as a young man growing up, I used to not like this story. I couldn't understand why it was that the five just didn't share. It seemed so un-Christian, so un- unfriendly, so unneighborly, so unfriendly. And yet the rationale is clear. Just because I was prepared and you weren't, why should I become unprepared in order to save you from the embarrassment of your wrong decision? This happens today all the time. You know, people are thinking, well, I have to do these things just because I have them. I think of Fiddler on the Roof. I just think that's a great, great... Have you seen that? It's a great musical. And I love the singing, you know, if I was a rich man, yada, yada, yada. All this wonderful stuff. In that particular story, Tevye, who is the main character, the main male character in the musical, A Fiddler on the Roof, Tevye is approached by a beggar who says to him, alms for his begging. The beggar says to Tevye, alms for the poor, alms for the poor. Now, a kopeck is a penny. And so in the play, Tevye reaches into his pocket and takes out one kopeck and gives it to the beggar and says, here you are, one kopeck. And the beggar says, but yesterday you gave me two kopecks. And Tevye says, well, I don't have two kopecks. And the beggar says, well, is that my problem? You know, the beggar has nothing. Tevye doesn't have to give him anything. Because Tevye gave him two pennies yesterday, the beggar expects two pennies today, when in fact he doesn't even deserve the one penny, only because of the gracious goodness of Tevye, gives it to him out of his poverty. He shares what he has with the beggar. Likewise, in this story, there is no reason why those who prepared should feel embarrassed. There is no reason why those who are ready should feel guilty. There is no reason why those who considered the importance and the privilege of this invitation and those who prepared to fulfill their responsibilities and those who were willing to be held accountable for the doing of what they were asked to do, there was no reason why they should apologize. There is no reason why they should feel that they have to make the other person look good. The other person had the same amount of time to do what they did, and we're taking it for granted that they had the same resources, and they could have been prepared, but they weren't. Reminds me of something that happened to me over the years, more than once, and that is people want to share what you've earned, but they don't want to share what they've earned. And this is one of the contexts here as well, in that there is no absolute rule here to say that those who have must give to those who do not have, especially when those who do not have are in that situation because of their own lack of discipline, their own lack of respect, their own lack of work ethic. There are people who don't work to get ahead, other people to take care of them. There are people who don't try. They want other people to bring them along. There are people who think that everybody owes them a living. Well, nobody owes you a living. That my dad was very big on that, I'll tell you that. Okay. Now, in this story, the five bridesmaids, the wise ones, say, go to the community, go to the sellers. You have money. You have resources. Go out, you have a few minutes left, and get some oil. Now, there were other people in the town. Now, I'm sure that these five girls could have gone from place to place and said, give me a little bit of oil, give me a little bit of oil. I'm sure they had friends in the town, in the village, who could have given them some oil. Maybe their homes, their own homes, were close at hand. They could have run back and gotten enough oil and filled up their lamps and rushed back. But they didn't succeed in doing that, whether or not they were refused by the other people, whether they lived far away. The parable can't be pressed too hard on that issue. But they were given, yet, even at the end, an opportunity to correct their mistake. In the meantime, the bridegroom comes, and the door is shut. He now, how do you think he feels? You know, let's just take the bridegroom. Here is the bridegroom. He has 10 friends. And the bride, maybe these are friends of the bride. And they're 10 friends. I've asked them to be in my wedding. I've given them a position of honor. I placed them in a position of prominence and of importance. And when he arrives, he finds out that 5 of them didn't care enough to be ready. That 5 of them didn't think enough of him to be ready. That 5 of them disregarded the privilege that he gave to him, to them, and just, you know, treated it like it was nothing. So he goes in and he says, well, I'm disappointed, I'm sad, I'm embarrassed, but let's go in anyway with you 5 and us and the rest of the revelers, and we'll have our party, we'll have our feast, we'll have our wedding ceremony, wedding reception. And those other ones, well, it's their loss, not mine. Of course, it is his loss. He feels bad. He is insulted, and he is embarrassed in public to see that those who he chose were unwilling. You know, how does it feel when you choose people and you choose to honor them and you choose to give them a prominent position in something you're planning, in something that's important to you, and they fail you? And they fail you by choice, or they fail you by lack of respect, or they fail you by not appreciating you enough to do it correctly. Feels pretty bad. So the bridegroom goes in and shuts the door. Now they come, these willy-nilly people, who now they have enough, and they say, well, let us in. And he says, no, I'm not letting you in. You failed me. And now you want me to let you in? How could you expect that? What's the matter with you? You know, as an American, this doesn't sit terribly well with us. I think we have, especially in our day, this kind of Christian culture. We live in a Christian society, a Jewish or Christian society, where the influence of Judaism and the influence of Christianity has permeated into the society, into the social structure of our nation today in America. That's not to say that everybody's a Christian or everybody's a Jew, but the values and the standards and the ethics and the morals of Judaism and Christianity have percolated through the society and permeated into the society, and so that culturally we are our Judaic Christian roots and foundation. And so sharing is part of that. Charity is part of that. Judaism, very big on charity. Christianity, very big on charity. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you, part of Judaism and Christianity. Do unto others the right thing. Do no harm. Share and the like more. And so when we hear this story, we sort of go back, we sort of step back, and we say, well, you know, there's something, is it right here? Why aren't they sharing? Why aren't they being nice? Well, nice is not always the answer. Sometimes people pay for their own lack of making the right decision. Sometimes people pay for making the wrong decision, especially if those decisions are intentionally made. Now, let's take an example here. The bridegroom was delayed. Of course, they didn't know when he would come. But during the time before he came, some one of the 5 could have said to the other 5, well, listen, you know, 5 of us don't have enough oil, so I individually am going to go and I'm going to get some extra gallon of oil for the 5 of us who don't have enough, and then we'll all have enough. But there was no one person during the waiting period who was willing to sacrifice themselves for the good of the group. They all just stood back. They just sort of, well, I'm not going to be absent when the bridegroom comes because he won't like me. Of course, neither one of the other 4 would as well, and none of the 5. So no one person, if any one of them, was willing to say, I'll take the hit. How different it is with Jesus. who takes the hit for us, who goes out on a limb for us, who goes and faces death for us and in our place, enters into the place of darkness in order that he might bring us through the darkness into the place of light, our own death. How different it is of Jesus, who goes and faces suffering in order to conquer suffering. How different it is for Jesus, who faces despair. And as he cries out, my God, why have you forsaken me? As he hangs on the cross, suspended between heaven and earth, abandoned by his friends, derided by his enemies, and now having the Father turn his face away, even for a second, as Jesus descends into the place of the dead. How different it is for us. He goes. He says in the Garden of Gethsemane, you know, Father, take this cup away from me. I don't want to do this. It's too hard for me. I don't know if I can. It's so painful. Dying is so frightening and terrible. And facing the whip and the scourge and the nails and the spear and the crown of thorns, take this away from me. But then not as I will, Father, but as you will me to do. And Jesus submits himself individually to do for us what we cannot and we will not do for ourselves. Now back to our story. So here we have this situation which presents itself to us of the women outside. And I think if we look at it in today's light, we might say, well, you know, I think that's unfair. And Jesus would say, no, it's not unfair. It is true that they failed the bridegroom. Now, in my life, I would like to have a magic wand and change some story. So if I could change this story, I would change it to say that the women, the bridesmaids in this case, but it could be males or females, it's a story. That in this case, they may have been outside and pleaded. They could have said, let us in, and he said, no, I do not know you. You failed me, you embarrassed me, you insulted me, you caused me to be shamed in public, and now I'm not letting you in. And they could have said, we're sorry. They could have pleaded with him. They could have asked him to forgive them. Could have said, well, we just didn't know. We're sorry. Forgive us. Let us in. But don't forget, it's the wedding feast. And so the possibility is existent that the bridegroom, carry the story a little bit further than we carry it on in our own world, Jesus may have said, okay, yeah, it happens to me. I'm sorry that this happened to you. Come on in. Join the feast. Be with us. He could have reached out inclusively. And maybe he did. There were other places where Jesus indicates that the people on the outside would plead to get in. And perhaps, by God's grace, he may let them in. There's also the parable of Lazarus. And the man at the gate, who goes to heaven, bridegroom goes to hell. So in the sense that, you know, if you take the context of Lazarus and Dives, you know, the idea of the rich man who ignores the beggar at the gate, put that contraposing it with this story, you may see that they both complement. And so in this case, the bridegroom says, no, I judge you because of what you did to me, because you failed me. I'm not letting you in. And then they could say, yes, Lord, but even the dogs eat the crumbs that fall from the master's table. They could have been not humiliated, but they could have been humbled. And in their humility, they could have asked for forgiveness. And in the context of a wedding feast, the benevolence of the bridegroom would be to forgive them, of course, for the sake of the wedding itself. Them in. He doesn't want to have this friction and difficulty. There is no indication that that happened, and there's no indication that the five unwise persons asked to be forgiven. they may have become angry. I can imagine that when they came with their lamps, this is imaginary, and now they knock on the closed door and they say, "Let us in, let us in." And the bridegroom says, "No, I do not know you, because you have failed me, you have hurt me, you have embarrassed me, you have insulted me, you have disrespected me, I'm not letting you in." They could have become angry and they could have picked up rocks and stones and thrown them at the door. They could have kicked up dust upon the bridegroom. They could have called them all kinds of names because they said, "We waited and waited for you, you didn't come, you no good stinker." They could have been blasting him every which way. And this happened. It happens when people who have failed are faced with their failure, and now they don't agree that they should have to pay. They don't agree that they should not be let in. They don't agree that it's the bridegroom's prerogative to withdraw the privilege and to tell them that they are no longer considered privileged guests at his wedding feast. They have there are many people who have been invited to something, who have been granted something, like in the story of Tevye and the beggar, and now they have a right to it. Well, you invited us. You invited us to be in the bridal party. You invited us to be here for you, and we have a right. You must let us in. If you don't, you're no good stinker. We're going to smack you in the face. There are people like that. I've had that situation. Again, that's not a humble response. And if that is the response, it's not accurate. It's not true, because a privilege granted can be a privilege withdrawn. A gift is different, but this is a privilege. It's an honor given. When the person fails to respect the honor can be withdrawn. It is automatically. Right? As soon as they fail to respect the honor is withdrawn. These were five persons, along with the other five, who were given positions of prominence, privilege, who failed to gain the benefit of it. When the bridegroom came, and they were supposed to go out and be the privileged party and the greeters, those who were to lead the bridegroom to the bridal table and to lead the bridegroom into the bridal party, to be the announcers and heralds of his and her arrival, five of them were not even there to do that because they were unprepared. They had already lost the benefit, the privilege of what they had been granted by their own action. There was no way they could regain it. Now, when they came back and they said, "Let us in, let us in," what did they want to be let in as? Did they want to be let in as the five specially privileged people who were to be sitting at the bridal table? Or did they expect to go right up to the bridal table and sit alongside the bridegroom and the bride 1 hour into the wedding, having failed their own duty? Or did they expect to sit in the back at some middle table and just be glad that they were part of the wedding reception? It's a question that you can play with a parable. And the parables of the Bible are something you can play with them and think about your own experiences and what it would mean to you today if this was your bridal party, if this was your wedding, if you were the groom, if you were the bride. How would you this happen to you? And what would you do? Now, maybe you're a very generous person. Oh, well, come on in. But maybe not. And most certainly, there's one thing. I know a human person. It would be very hard to that the person, family, upon whom you gave the privilege and the honor and the dignity of being privileged to be the official welcoming party, failed miserably and were not even there when you arrived, I don't think you'd forget. You might forgive it for the sake of the wedding. But after that, as a human being, what would be your relationship to those persons in future days? So a dignity and an honor here where the bridegroom says, "Look, let's not pretend. You didn't do it. You didn't accomplish what I asked you to accomplish and what you accepted you would accomplish. Something you agreed to. We had a compact. We had a contract. We had a deal. We had a relationship, and you destroyed that relationship, not me. So there's an honesty and there's an integrity to Jesus' answer here. Now, in the obvious context of Christianity, this is a story about your life and my life, and saying, well, what is it? How are we going to live our lives? You and I have been created, according to Genesis, in the image and likeness of God. We carry around in us the likeness. We carry around in us the privilege. We are the privilege. We are created in the image and likeness of God. We're given the earth as our playground. We're given the beauty of the earth as something, as a gift. We're given ourselves. There's no reason why we must be, when we were children, we would say to our parents, well, I didn't ask to be born, you know. And that's true, we didn't ask to be born, but we were born because our parents were in love and they loved each other and we were the result of that love. And they loved us throughout our youth and our childhood, our infancy, our adulthood. We didn't ask to be born, but thank God that we were because of them. We appreciate them because they gave us the life that we have. Same with God. He gave us the life that we have. There's no reason why you have to be or I have to be. It's just that we are. And now that we have this and we've accepted that, we did not accept it, we do accept it, then what do we do with our lives? How do we conduct ourselves? Do we conduct ourselves as someone who is cavalier and disregards the greatness of the privilege of being a human person in our day and age? Are we Christians who accept that Jesus died for our sins on the cross? Are we people who accept that God created for us the gift of forgiveness of sins and salvation and the gift of eternal life in heaven? But we take it in a very casual way, and so we don't really do anything to honor that gift or honor the privilege that we have been given. Do we not go to church on Christmas? Do we not go to church on Easter? There's so many people. I have so many people. Let me just say this on a quick aside here. I have so many people say to me, you don't have to go to church to be a Christian. Well, let me tell you something. Christians go to church. Well, I don't have to. Well, you know, that's like saying, well, I don't have to go to the wedding to be your friend. Well, if you're invited, you better go. You know, there's other stories where the bridegroom invites them, and this one can't go because he has a bride himself, or he has bought an ox, or he has to clean his house, or he has to gather his grain into the granary, or he has to make a trip, and therefore he can't come to the wedding feast. And remember that the king invites others in their place. Well, he replaces them. He doesn't add and say, well, you're still my buddies and friends and pals. I invited you to come, but you didn't come when you could have come. The idea of that parable is that all their excuses are phony excuses. And again, we have to put ourselves in that context. If we have so-called friends and relatives and others who in every possible way can make it to the wedding, and they choose to lie to us, tell us false reasons why they cannot come to our wedding or send us a card or anything, we don't just take that very well, do we? And so this particular story is in that genre where Jesus is saying, these persons who I thought were mine proved themselves not to be what I thought them to be. And so people, just because they say they're a Christian, doesn't mean they are. Just because they say that they're believers, but they don't go to church, or they don't say their prayers, they don't read the Bible, they don't do anything about their so-called Christianity or Judaism or any other religion for that matter, but they live their life as though they had no religion, those people are disenfranchising themselves already. And so at the end of the day, when they're told that they really never were Christians, they can't become angry and furious and rant and rave and yell against the owner or against the bridegroom for telling them the truth of what they have already been doing their whole life. That's their reality. And all he is doing, accepting or recognizing it. So, friends, what are we asked to do? Well, we're told that the bridegroom tarry. That is really a message of hope. It's a strange one for us, maybe. But he's saying, we know the bridegroom will come. We know we've been invited. We know that we're supposed to be prepared. And there's time. So, number one, be ready. Take the extra flask of oil. Honor the privilege of what you have. If you're a Christian, then go to church. Christian, then pray. If you're a Christian, then receive the Holy Sacrament of Communion. If you're a Christian, don't stay home on Christmas and Easter. Get out there. If you're a Jew, go to shul. Go to the temple. Go on Yom Kippur or Rosh Hashanah. Do what you say. Be who you are. And remember that even if you're not, as you're hearing my voice, there is time to make a correction. Now, people say to me, I don't go to church because all the hypocrites are in church. Well, you know what? You're the hypocrite. The hypocrites are in church, but they're not hypocrites who point their fingers at you. They're there asking the forgiveness of their sins, participating in the community in some form or other. You're standing outside and throwing rocks at them. It doesn't make you any better, though. It doesn't even bring you up to their level. It just makes you different. You say, well, I'm a Christian, but I don't go to church because everybody there is a phony. Everybody there is a liar. Everybody there is unfriendly. Well, by absenting yourself in your pride, then you are all the things that you accuse them of being. That's another one of self-fulfilling situations. So is there any hope? Yes, there is hope. The hope is that the bridegroom does tarry. Jesus is not coming back, as far as we know, tomorrow. He could come back in the next 2 minutes to judge the living and the dead. But we have the concept in the scriptures that the day of judgment is forestalled or is stalled in order that we, those who are supposed to be prepared, will have enough time to be prepared. And we should use that time to be prepared and to be ready when he comes to judge the living and the dead. You can do that. Possible. You can start today, this very moment in this program, to say to the Lord God, I need to be prepared, Father. I need to be prepared, my brother Jesus. I need to be prepared, the Holy Spirit of the living God. And so I am going today to make that commitment. I'm going to ask that you fulfill in me your will, that I may be enabled to do what you have made me to do, what you have privileged me to do, what you have honored me with doing, and that is being the Christian that I am or the Jew that I am, or whatever the religious context is, to be the person that I'm supposed to be. That's up to you. That's how you do it. This has been a great program. I've enjoyed being with you. I want to thank you. I want to just stop a little bit. I'm going to play three clips. These are clips from the Worship Today program. These are things that we purchased the rights to at St. Matthew's Evangelical Lutheran Church in Bergenfield, New Jersey, some years ago. The first one, these are CDs, and the music is quite wonderful. It's unique music. It's made for listening. It's made for singing in choirs. It's made for church participation. It's also music that I am glad to say I share with a program that we put on through Radionomy, radionomy.com. And the name of the program is Christian Today. The way you get to that is you go on the internet, you type in radionomy.com. You go to their site, and then there's a question, you know, a search box in there, and it's a radio, it's an internet radio program, and you type in the words Christian and then a space today. will come up, and then you click on that. And you can take that link, put it on your screen, you can put it on your desktop, you can put it on your telephone, and you can be listening, because we are producing Christian music 24/7. Now, we will eventually be producing commentary and news and the like more as we build up our programming, but right now, it's on radionomy.com, and then once you get there, Christian Today is the name of the program, and you click on that and use the apps available even for your phone. I want to play the first one. It's called Awesome God. It's about 37 seconds. Please stay with us. Each one will be about 30 seconds, and I just would like you to hear them. This is from Worship Today. Worship Today can be found on the Internet, and this is the title of the piece is Awesome God. Please listen to this.
Hi, I'm Dave McClellan, publisher of Worship Today Music Service, the service that's changing the way churches buy music. Remember, as you listen to this CD, it's not a preview or a sample packet. You have everything you need to begin using these songs right away. Make all the paper or cassette copies you need. No extra permissions are necessary, and of course, no extra charge. Our title track for the... Hi, I'm Dave McClellan, publisher of Worship Today.
Sorry about that. We played that. I'm going to go on. This is Since I Have Been Redeemed. Isn't that great? A little upbeat, nice spiritual. Since I Have Been Redeemed, put out by Worship Today. And Dave McClellan, as you heard, he talked about that. It's a great music service. You can get it for your uses. Great stuff on there. You can also hear much of this we played, because we bought the rights to these things, on our Radionomy.com program called Christian Today. Here's the other one I just want to share with you today for about 30 seconds, and that is called You Are the Rock. You are the rock. Sweet music, You Are the Rock. Since I Have Been Redeemed, You Are the Rock, Awesome God. And we'll be playing clips of this music in future programs. Remember, you can hear this on Radionomy.com. It's an internet radio program. And the title of the program is Christian Today. It's 24/7. We hope you'll tune into that as well. I want to thank you for listening to this Blog Talk Radio program. We're just happy for Blog Talk Radio, and we're happy for you. We thank you for listening. We've had... about 70,000 listeners this year, and we're very excited that we're reaching out to as many of you as are willing to participate with us. And click on if you'd like to be reminded, if you'd like to get a mailing if you'd like to know when these programs are on. I try to get them on as much as I can, but this is not a job. This is a ministry, and I am the pastor of a local congregation. I'm also a husband and a father and the grandfather of nine, and so there's a lot doing. And so this is a ministry, and it's not something that I can do every day. I try to do it as best I can, as often as I can, and I appreciate you, your willingness to put up with that and to listen to these programs. Again, Pastor Fred, thank you very much for listening.